It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. Okay, we're joined here today with two members of the CNT, or the National Confederation of Labor in Spain. It is an anarcho-syndicalist union, been around since the early 1900s. We're going to be talking a little bit about the history of the CNT, but also specifically what anarchists in Spain are doing, how are they responding to the independence movement, how are they organizing either within or against it. What do they see happening? There's a lot of stuff going on in the ground, and there's been a lot of stuff written, but we're glad to have these two people here to talk about what's happening. You just want to introduce yourselves real quickly?
Hello. Yeah. Okay. Hi, I'm Miguel from CNT. I'm the guy dealing with international groups and contacts, something like that. So I'm happy to be here.
I'm Ellison. I'm part of CNT Artes Gráficas, Comunicación y Espectáculos, graphic art, communication, and shows. It's a Madrid-based industry industrial union. Excuse me. I am currently acting secretary of organizing and also secretary of organizing at the local federation level. So for the five unions that are in CNT unions in, and I also am on the working group for international relations with Miguel.
Okay, awesome. Well, obviously a podcast devoted to the history of the CNT, its relevance and importance within the history of anarchism and also the history of Spain, could take up a series of podcasts, but I'm just hoping if real briefly you can tell listeners a little bit of history of the CNT, both in its formation in the Spanish Revolution and also especially after the fall of Franco, how the union kind of came back and then kind of how it exists today.
Well, very briefly, CNT was formed in 1911, if I recall it right. It was basically formed out of coming together of different working class initiatives from an anarchist point of view. And it was inspired by revolutionary syndicalism that was very strong in France at the time. And it coupled also with a large presence of anarchists in, as a movement throughout Spain. But it developed very big unions or groups in mainly Catalonia and Andalusia, but also in other parts. And it grew and became stronger together with the anarchist movement, leading to the Spanish Civil War in 1936. And to the point that when the fascists attempted a coup d'etat, the people too, of the CNT militants, together with other unions, they took to the streets, armed themselves, and defeated the army for the time being in towns like Barcelona. Once the military was defeated in large areas of Spain, people went on to create collectivizations and put their workplace, factories and everything under workers' control, and that's what's called the Spanish Revolution. I think that's one of the highlights, you can say, of anarchist history.
Right.
And And yeah, I find that people from abroad are usually very interested in that part of the history, but sometimes they tend to overlook the whole process leading to that. It took like half a century of organization and strikes and working class organizing to get to this point.
Right.
Sadly, the Civil War was lost in 1939, and lots of people fled to exile. Those who stayed behind were either shot dead or tortured to death or sent to prison. And obviously, the union, CNT or any other union, were made illegal for the next 40 years, which is as long as the Franco dictatorship lasted. And that ended in 1975 when Franco died, and the country began this process, which is now called the transition, moving from the Franco regime to the current democratic state organization. At that time, CNT became a very prominent organization, one of the main leading unions, together with the UGT, which is linked to the Socialist Party. And it was named public enemy number one, because the politicians and all the people in charge of the whole process were really scared that there were so many people joining CNT and that. Out of that transition process came this what is now called the 1978 regime, which we'll come back later on, which was this kind of model of state, which has got a number of organizations or a number of I don't know how to say it, but is organized in a way that political parties, a couple of official large mainstream unions, and some other economic bodies guarantee the stability of the country, and obviously they make it difficult for those trying to organize outside of the frame. As in terms of unions, that means union elections are organized in the workplace. And these two main unions, Comisiones Obreras, CGOO, and UGT, UGT, which are linked to the, linked to the Communist Party and to the Socialist Party. They are the mainstream unions, and they got most, they actually get much more leverage that their membership allows them for, but they are recognized as some sort of official unions. And they've been instrumental in keeping worker struggles down to ensure stability of the whole system. That coupled with a few unsavory deeds that the government orchestrated against CNT in particular and any other group or union that didn't agree or didn't sign up to this agreement that brought into being this 1978 regime, are basically kept every dissident down for the last 40 years since the late 70s, and actually a number of splits that have happened in the history of CNT have in the end they've been proven to have been orchestrated by the government. So the history after the end of the Franco regime, it was first we had this huge rise in membership, and then a few things happened. Police informants convinced people to plant fire bombs in the place and things like that. People got very disappointed, and they were not happy with what was going on. And it's not something very. I'm not making much sense, am I?
No, you're doing great. It sounds like somebody's playing a bass guitar by one of the recording things, though. But...
Yeah, I know. Give me a sec.
Do you want to add anything to that?
I only hope.
Did you mention, Miguel, did you want to talk about CGT and the split in the 80s?
Yeah, that was going to be my next
one. Yeah, sorry, that's what... basically, the issue of the union elections in the workplace became very became one of the most relevant in this new system of union representation. So nearly all unions agreed to take part in these elections, except for CNT, and that opened up a lot of debate within CNT. Some people wanted to take part in the election, some others didn't, and in the end, it kind of caused this massive split. And some people left. They continued to call themselves CNT, and it was a long and bitter split, and it was long and bitter process. And in the end, they were forced to change their denomination to CGT and give up on the CNT brand. And CNT has continued ever since being opposed to taking part in union elections. And instead, over time, after a number of years, we've been able to develop a different way of being involved, have a presence in the workplace, which is around the secciones sindicales, the union sections, which is basically the assembly or the meeting of all workers who belong to these, who belong to CNT in the workplace. And by developing this role, it has allowed us to have a presence and being effective in the workplace without actually having to take part in the union elections. That's been a slow process and it's taken a number of years, but I think we're getting there and Alison can expand on that.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a little bit about the union elections. I know that at least for Americans, it's not really clear because you guys don't have elections at workplaces. Union elections in Spain really mean that workers are elected to sit on this negotiating board to discuss with bosses labor issues. They're not directly involved, like the workers aren't involved in decision making. So that's one problem CNT has with the union elections. Another problem that we have is that when unions get on these negotiating boards, works councils, they receive money from the central government for the amount of people that they're representing. So they're effectively getting paid to do this representation work. That's another thing that CNT disagrees with. I like to kind of clarify that. It sounds like we're sort of sectarian. It's not. There's a real good theoretical reason why we don't want to be on these works councils. One of the big things is we don't want to be separated to make kind of a hierarchy in the working in between union organizers and just the regular people who are working at a on a job. So that's one thing.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that a number of years ago, it seemed like the only way to be effective and organized in the workplace was to take part in these union elections. And other than that, there was no actual or no real way of having a say in what's going on in the workplace. That seemed to be the case back in the 80s, maybe, when this split happened. I don't think that's the case anymore, because now we have lots of secciones sindicales organized and effectively in the workplace, and we've kind of proven that it can be done, and we can be effective. We want strikes, we want negotiating rounds with bosses and force them to make concessions, and actually with workers having a say in through their being involved in the section syndical. So it's not just electing your representative and they go out and sign whatever agreement that you don't even see what it is until it actually takes place. Yeah, all the changes take place in the workplace. But by organizing through the secciones sindicales, we can actually channel, actually all the workers have a say in whatever is decided around the workplace. So, and by way of the we've proven can be done.
Right, and thanks for making that distinction between the two anarcho-syndicalist unions. But needless to say, I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of anarchist groups and tendencies within Spain. I was told once by somebody from Spain that in the media, the Spanish media does not refer to anarchists as anarchists, kind of in a derogatory sense. They've had to make up a new term called anti-sistema, I believe, to kind of to kind of demonize anarchists or black box or militants in the streets. Which in America, I mean, anarchist still is the word that they used to kind of attack us. But but the point is that there's a history of anarchism in Spain, and a lot of people identify with it enough to the point where, you know, people. Enough people understand kind of what the anarchist movement is about and its larger goals.
Mm. Yeah, I was once talking to a lawyer, and he explained to me that this Sistema thing came up because police were arresting people in demonstrations. They were sending them to the judge to be sentenced or whatever, and they were basically saying, "Oh, that's because they're anarchists." And some judges were going back and saying, "Oh, well, they can do whatever they want, and it's not." Being an anarchist is not a crime for itself. And they were releasing them. Right. So instead, they started referring also, like, as a way of demonizing them, saying they were anti-sistema, which they're against the system. And obviously, the system is great, so if you're against the system, you must be evil.
Right.
So that's what he said. I'm not sure to what extent that is true, but it makes sense to me.
Right. Okay, well, is there anything else anybody wants to add kind of about the history of the CNT in general before we kind of get into talk on the independence vote?
I think there might be a good segue here for the CGT-CNT thing, which I know is of interest, is that although there was this kind of strategy tactics split, we do work together on a by basis, like if something comes up that we need to work with CGT or CGT would like to work with us on something, or Solidaridad Obrera or any of these smaller anarcho-syndicalist unions, we do come together and do, you know, demonstrations together. We've called strikes together, etc. So,
right. And to be clear, the politics of the CGT are explicitly anarchist.
I couldn't say so.
No, shots fired.
No. And I think one big difference between CNT and CET, and it might be a matter of principle, but I think it's relevant, is at some point, I'm not sure when, but at some point they drop from the principles, from the stated principles. They drop the call for libertarian communism. So CNT has been repeatedly stating in every Congress that the goal is libertarian communism or anarcho-communism, as you wish to call it. And for us, it's important. It's not that we are a union because we just want to get people to live better in this society or just get higher wages. We understand unionism as a way to transform society by empowering people at the workplace, eventually taking control of the workplace and of the economy. So we see that with CCNT as a tool to achieve a goal, which is libertarian communism. I'm not sure when CET dropped that claim, but they dropped it. So that misses the whole point of why you are working in the union. So I know there are lots of people who call themselves anarchists or libertarians in CET as well, but I think they kind of miss their perspective because they're just working in a union, which can be effective at some point, achieving higher or getting higher wages for the workers and things, but that's not the whole point. I think that's also an important difference.
Right. Okay, well, thanks for kind of laying that out and telling people kind of the different formations in Spain. Well, let's just get into it. I mean, so can you just explain to people after the fall of Franco, The Constitution was enacted and divided the Spanish state into various autonomous regions. Yeah. And one of those was Catalonia. Yeah. How did it get to the point where people wanted to, or enough people wanted to leave the Spanish state and start a new state? And also, just how did you, as anarchists, whose goal is to destroy the state and create a classless and stateless society, just kind of seeing this thing grow, what was your response to it? Like, how did it get to this point?
That's a very complicated question.
Well, that's well, you kind of need to look at the history of the Spanish state, but that would take us back to the Middle Ages and things. So let's not go back that far.
Right.
I mean, there were Spain was not a thing, was not a state until the 18th century. Like before, you had different kingdoms, and they had, it was a bit like the United Kingdom, like they had different kingdoms with different laws and things, but just one crown and one queen in this case. And it was kind of the same up to the 18th century. But after a long war, then a new king came in, a French king, and he just decided that he wanted to build a state according to the absolutist model. So he suppressed all these different kingdoms, all these self rule that people had in the different regions. And since then, there's always been people in certain areas, like in Catalonia, Basque Country, maybe Galicia to a certain extent, who wanted to leave Spain. This wish to leave Spain became stronger in the 19th century, same as in other parts of Europe. There was this nationalist sentiment sweeping through, and then these people was coming up with this recovering lost traditions and this sense of nationhood and things like that. So that was at play here in Spain as well, and that gave these nationalist movements a new life. That built up to the 1930s when the nationalists were another social actor at play, and there were nationalist parties by that time. They were also suppressed by Franco at the end of the Spanish Civil War, and to the point that for 40 years they were banned to speak. They couldn't speak their own language. They couldn't attend schools in their own language. So people would have to speak the language underground with their parents. Older people would not be able to, back in the days, there were lots of people who would not speak anything other than Catalan or Basque in certain areas. And they were not allowed to speak it openly in the street because they would be repressed. They were kind of forced to speak Spanish, even if they could barely speak it. So that created a lot of animosity towards Spain.
Just to break in here, I mean, it creates animosity to Spain, but it also becomes, so you have this mixture of nationalist movements from the 19th century, like Miguel said. You have a republic that is squashed by the dictator. In the republic, Miguel, correct me if I'm wrong, Catalonia was granted, autonomous. It was granted a lot of autonomy within the republic. That was taken away with Franco. But then Franco and taking away of their autonomy becomes all, so the nationalist movement becomes like a Republican anti-Franco movement. Mm-hmm. I think that that's kind of, there's a lot of different things mixed in there. There's the language, defensive language, culture, maybe ethnicity. Then there's the anti-Franco being the centralizing force in Spain. So also...
Absolutely, but the nationalists being anti-Franco didn't necessarily mean they were on the left.
I mean, kind of now that people reread that history, sort of in that.
Yeah, but the opposite is true. Actually, lots of people, basically anyone who stands for Spain's unity is on the right. So not everyone against Spanish unity, or not everyone wanting to break from Spain is on the left. There's actually lots of right-wing nationalists, particularly in Catalonia and also in the Basque Country. But everyone wanting to stop these people breaking from Spain is on the right.
I'm just curious, like, where this kind of movement kind of arose from exactly. Like, what are the main selling points for this movement for people to join it, that they want to leave Spain? Like the everyday working class person, why are they going out and why did they go out and vote to leave Spain to create an independent state? Mm-hmm. Like, if you talk to those people, what would they say?
I think it's got obviously there's this nationalist drive to be from Spain, and lots of people are nationalists just because they are, because they don't like the idea of Spain. They want to break away from it, and just because they think a Catalan state is better than the Spanish one, or would be better than the Spanish one. One of the main themes is economic inequalities. Catalonia is a quite well-off part of Spain. It's a quite well-off region, and I think lots of people have got the feeling that they're contributing more money to other regions of Spain than what they're getting back through investments or through the central government paying to the regional to the local government. That economic argument features prominently in lots of the discourses. Other people who are on the left, they just see unity with the see Spain as a fascist state, and they want to break away from that. And actually, you can blame them, because it's been linked to the Franco regime so strongly that it's difficult to disentangle now the idea of the unity of Spain from the right, basically.
Right, that's what I meant by the unity of Spain is a Franco slogan. So talking about making Spain strong or one single Spain, highly reminiscent of
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've been seeing pictures of people giving fascist salutes and stuff like that, you know, holding Spanish flags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, crawling out from underneath their rocks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you talk about the process that led to the independence vote? Like, how did that come about exactly?
Yeah, I mean, actually, the as I think you mentioned before, Catalonia already has a local government with a lot of have the large control of what was going on in Catalonia, and even then they rack up this massive debt, and they had to do all these cuts in social services, education, health, and everything. Because of the economic crisis between 2007 and 2011. In 2011, when the 15th of May movement took to the streets, people in Barcelona and Catalonia were demanding the fall of their own government, of the local government, which was a right-wing nationalist. At some point, these people, these politicians, they realized that the only way to stay in power was to kick up the nationalist bucket. And then they started with this ramping up the nationalist rhetoric towards independence. And because there has always been a movement for independence, to break from Spain, they kind of linked together, and they began this push for independence. And as some anarchist comrades wrote 5 years ago, it's like, oh, is it surprising that 1 year ago or so we were asking for the fall of the local government because of the repression against the 15th of May movement, and now people are shaking hands with them in the streets because they're calling for independence. So that So the intention with ramping up the nationalist rhetoric was evident. If they just had this massive crisis that they wouldn't have survived otherwise, and they basically played the nationalist card to get away with it. And then the process began, and people have been kind of supportive, and every time people also face or saw the response that the central government was giving to this demand for independence or this demand, this nationalist demand, people became more keen on breaking away from Spain. And that process been leading up to the referendum. Before the referendum, they already had another referendum that that the people who wanted to stay in Spain boycotted, so they said it was not binding. Then they called for elections, but they said that if the nationalists or the independentists won these local elections, then that would be kind of a referendum, even if it wasn't, and they won. So then they organized this referendum. It's taken a number of years, and I think the movement to break from Spain is being growing and getting stronger all the time. And that's led us to the situation we're in now.
This is also should be, you know, cast against the background of a lot of referendums and secessionist movements recently. You know, in Quebec, there was a big secessionist movement a number of years ago. Scotland just had their own referendum. So if this isn't happening in a, you know, the whole idea of having a referendum isn't a new idea, and there have been referendums in a number of European states on secession. It's not like the Catalans made this idea up or anything.
Right. Well, can you talk about, I mean, so this kind of push for independence is growing. You know, it's coming from different sectors. How did the anarchist movement respond to this, especially the CNT? You know, what was your response to this? This idea that there needs to be not just Spanish state, but now, you know, a whole new state.
We've not been part of any of these. We've not been part of this movement at all for all these years. I don't know if any of our members have been involved with any of these demonstrations or referendums or anything. Maybe, probably, I don't know. But. As such, we've never been involved in any of these, and we haven't supported or make any calls to support any of these. When the date for the 1st of October, the referendum on independence was coming clear, and it was becoming more and more evident that the central state was going to play a repressive card and was going to play it hard on the people trying to vote, then it kind of became different in our eyes. Because now there was a state that was repressing just people on the streets and grandparents, parents, even children, because the referendum took place in schools. So, and obviously when there's lots and lots of people coming out in the streets and people are holding meetings and having reunions and beginning to talk not only of independence, but also of other social and economic goals that they need to achieve as well, then it is our understanding that as revolutionaries, we have to be part of that. Not from a nationalist point of view, obviously. Not with the aim or the idea of building a new state or creating a new state, but of encouraging people to get out in the streets, encouraging people to talk more and discuss about all these social and economic goals that they want to achieve as well. And
Did you find that you all had success in that vein? Because I think so many times that people have engaged in these kind of, you know, limited struggles, and then they want to kind of push them farther, but just trying to get out of that box, especially when people think the main goal is the creation of a new state. Mm-hmm. Did you find, like, was there anything that the CNT or other anarchist formations did that was successful in kind of pushing it farther?
Well, I think you know, Miguel said something earlier that's really important, which is that CNT has a long-term goal, which is to institute. I mean, that's a guideline that we use. Like, I give workers trainings and stuff, and we have short-term goals, which are improve working conditions, medium-term goals, me to take control of the decision-making at your workplace, and then long-term goals, which are libertarian communism. I mean, that's part of like a general introductionary training. Even if we're just to participate in anything we were to participate in Catalonia, those would still be the long-term goals. I mean, you're always pushing in that direction. So anything that CNT was involved in would be guided along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, I don't think, there's hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. Well, I wouldn't say every day, but probably in Catalonia these days. There's all these massive demonstrations, rallies, and everything. And
right, we're not about it. Like, this isn't a small thing. This is a very, very big, massive social upheaval. CNT were not to participate, they would be, I feel like they wouldn't be, they'd be completely alienated from what's actually happening in society.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, that's true as well. And obviously, I don't think we don't believe that all these people are going to turn from nationalists, they're not going to leave their nationalist goals, and they're not going to leave their dream of independence to embrace libertarian communism and go, and they're not going to read our leaflets and go, oh yeah, these guys are right, yeah, let's go and fight for libertarian communism and screw an independent Catalonia. That's not going to happen, obviously. All these things that are happening, all these people are on the street for one goal and they want to achieve one thing, but they're also talking about other things. They're also, there's also people reminding them that these people who are leading this process now for independence were the same who were in charge of the repression against the 15th of May, movement. These are the same people that implemented all these cuts to social care, health, education, and everything just a few years ago. So people are beginning to also, some people are beginning to also question the whole process, the people leading the process. And that's why I think we have to be there. And that's why what I think we have to be saying to people, and it's like, look, yeah, that's fine. I mean, particularly, we're not concerned about the Spain's unity or independent Catalonia, but we are concerned about people wanting to achieve social and economic and goals. And that's what we're trying to put on the table, and that's what we're trying to bring to the fore.
Also, CNT actually didn't do anything with the referendum, but we did call a strike 3 days later. So.
Right, right. That was going to be my next question.
Right. So how does that kind of energy, what is CNT's response to that? Will we respond how Miguel and I feel we should be responding, which is through organized labor, pushing for.
Right. Well, let's just get into that. There was an article that was published on the Revolutionary IWW blog, which we republished, and that's kind of how we began this conversation. About the role of anarchist unions in the general strike that took place after the immense police repression during the voting of the referendum. Can you just talk about how was this strike organized? How did you go about building it? And what actually happened on the day of the general strike and how big was it?
Well, the strike, let's go back to the beginning. Yeah, on the 1st of October, there was this referendum. There was this massive police violence. And we kind of expected that to happen because people in Catalonia had seen this massive buildup of police presence throughout the region in towns and villages. So people were expecting this was going to happen. Unions began having meetings a couple of weeks before the referendum itself, touting the idea of having this general strike, because it was obvious that the central government was keen on not letting the government the referendum happening. Obviously, if that was going to be the case, there was going to be all these social unrest, people taking to the streets, demonstrations, and everything. And we thought that calling a general strike was our way of, as Edison said, using our own tools as a union to kind of contribute or to make our own contribution to this protest. So that's why was the opposition to repression has been a big issue when calling the strike, because it was obvious, it was rather obvious, sadly obvious, that it was going to happen. So a number of unions called for the strike. We just began organizing the strike, having meetings with other organizations in the places where we have presence, arranging, making plans for the day, making pickets to go around the town, trying to close down businesses and everything. One thing that is important is that this is the first time since the end of the Franco regime in the 70s, and obviously before that, because there were no strikes with the Franco regime. It's the first time that it's been alternative unions, not the main ones, not the mainstream, the two mainstream ones that have called for the general strike, and that actually is work fine, that people have stopped work and stayed home or gone to rallies or meetings. And I think that's important, that's a change of paradigm to what we have always seen. So it was always a case of like the two mainstream unions calling a strike, a general strike in this case, against some measure or something, and then the other unions had to follow suit. This is the first time that the opposite has happened. To the extent that after the 1st of October, these two mainstream unions also called for the strike, only to backtrack on the following day, obviously because they have been called from. They have got phone calls from the main offices in Madrid saying, what the fuck are you doing? You cannot call a strike, let's not do that. And then they called for, I don't know how to say that, un paro cívico, like a social stoppage or something, in which they ask workers to go and ask their bosses if they could stop for the day. And the idea was like, bosses and workers are like, will walk out, which is, I mean, it certainly doesn't make for a working class perspective,
right,
of struggle.
So there, that's really clear, the kind of alignment. There are the various types of nationalism that are happening in Catalonia, right? Like the two big unions are asking workers and bosses to be together and stop working in support of this movement or against the police repression. So that would be one kind of right-wing conservative bourgeois perspective. And then you have the alternative anarcho-syndicalist unions call for a general strike for workers to actually strike.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you were saying the big, in the US, we call them business unions. I don't know if you use that term over there, but they actually told their workers to come out as well, or they joined the strike. That was one of the big points that the article made, was that this was historic in the sense that the radical unions kind of, you know, led the charge, and the business unions followed.
You know,
that is what happened. I'm sorry, Miguel.
No, you do.
Okay, so the radical unions called a strike. The business unions said, oh, that's a good idea. So they jumped on board afterwards. And then 24 hours later, they backed down and said, we won't call a strike. We'll just ask workers to ask their bosses if everybody can stop working. It's sort of a symbolic gesture.
Right.
Yeah. The strike was called and, you know, made real by the alternative. We call them alternative unions. So and black.
The alt unions.
The alt unions. There you go.
Yeah. Well, how big was the strike? Because I mean, just from over here, the pictures seem quite massive, but I know in some of these tweets that we put up in the article, you know, this reached across, you know, the country in small towns and stuff. It wasn't just in the big cities. Seems to be what we're seeing.
Yeah, I think it was massive, but it was bound to be, because people were already in the streets demonstrating against the repression that they had suffer on the 1st of October when they went to this referendum. So there was all this unrest really going on, and there were all people actually few days before the 1st of October, there were lots of people walking out of the workplace because they saw that the police were taking positions around towns, and they were trying to make sure they will control everything on the 1st of October. So the Friday before, some people were already walking out, as I said, right, to join protests and rallies and everything. So it was kind of obvious that it was going to be massive. I also think that's why the business unions called for the strike on Sunday night, Sunday the 1st of October, and then they backtracked, but they also knew it was going to be big, so they knew they had to call for something. They couldn't just go and say like, no, don't do the strike. No, they had to call for something, so they came up with this half-witted idea of having asking your boss for permission to strike. Yeah, I don't know. What happens if your boss is for Spain's unity? What's he going to say? Like, you're going to say, like, oh, I want independence. Can I go on strike? They're like, no, you go back to work. Like, that's not going to work. Anyway.
Oh, okay. Oh, good work.
Yeah, okay.
I think the strike was massive. CNT's role with CGT was to kind of articulate pickets, demonstrations, organize the logistics of the strike, not only legalizing it, but also, you know, like, we're going to march here, we're going to do pickets here, we're going to have meetings in our offices. I mean, CNT has offices in many a small town in Catalonia, and those offices were used kind of as, you know, base of operations for a wide variety of social movements who wanted to participate in the strike. So, I mean, I personally see that as a great way for CNT to open its doors to all sorts of different social movements and be useful as a union, doing what unions have to do, which is call strikes. Basically, I mean, other things too, but
yeah.
Can you talk a little bit, you know, so on the streets that day, I mean, looking at the, and this article will be linked in the podcast, but on IGD, it's Anarchist Unions Take Lead in Catalonia General Strike. Was there tension between, you know, because there's all these banners and signs that say CNT, red and black flags, circle A's and stuff. I mean, was there a tension between people like, oh, we don't want the anarchists there, because sometimes that's how it is in the United States. Or what were the anarchist unions and the anarchist groups not seen in that way because they had put a lot of work into this?
I don't think that happened. No one's mentioned any instance of that to me. No, I don't think that was the case. Also, the anarchist movement in Catalonia was one of the, or rather, Catalonia was one of the main basis of the anarchist movement back in the days where there was a powerful anarchist movement. So people are used to see anarchists around, and historically they played an important role in Catalan society.
Yeah, I feel like anarchists are very integrated in Catalonian society.
Right. Well, after the general strike, what was the feeling within the CNT and within the wider anarchist movement kind of about, like, you know, where do we go from here?
That's an interesting...
that is a good question.
That's a good question, yeah. Well, we're also doing a lot of debate and a lot of self-searching among ourselves as well. It's not like we have a number of recipes that, or we have a number of very clear ideas of where we go to the next. Now we do this, now we do that. So we try to, I mean, the situation is confusing for everyone. There's lots of things happening. Lots of different actors playing their own agendas and trying to get their stuff done and put their message across. So that's what we're trying to do. We try to keep building on the, I mean, I think the main thing with the strike is that in the places where CNT has got a presence, and where CNT has been active around the strike. Now we've got a rapport with all of the social movements, and now we're trying to build up on that. We're trying to get them to discuss in bigger depth the social issues that are around in Catalonia society, the economical issues in the workplace. That's what we're trying to build up on. Now, while we're trying to do that, there's all these other things happening. I mean, there's, as I think Alison mentioned before, there's been lots and lots of specific nationalist rallies and demonstrations and things like that, which we haven't called for and which we're not supporting as such. But we're trying to keep on putting our message across. We're trying to get people talking about these issues that are actually relevant to their daily lives. And I think that's what we're trying to build up on. Now, what is going to happen is difficult to say. Is it going to come down to a direct confrontation between the central government and the Catalan government? Is repression going to get stronger or worse? I don't know. We will kind of cross the bridges as we get to them, and we'll see what we do depending on what the situation is and what people are saying and what they're calling for. But as from the beginning, our main goal has been to put on the table all these issues, to get people organized, to get people out in the streets, attending meetings, having discussions about the issues. I think we're achieving that in some places, not so well in some others. So that depends of the report that the CNT has got with all the different social movements and all the social actors in the different towns. So now our idea is to try to build up some. In some towns, this kind of relationship is working okay, and some others it is not so much. So now we're going to try and take a look at these places where it's working okay and try to develop the other ones where it's not working as well to see if they can catch up.
You can, all of this we should remind everybody that CNT is a confederation. So CNT's unions in Catalonia are the ones who are kind of making the decisions following our Congress resolutions, but they're making the decisions about what they feel is most appropriate in the given situation there, right? So, you know, the branch that's in Barcelona, the nationalist movement around them might be more right-wing and they don't want to have anything to do with them, so they don't associate with those people. In another town in another town in Catalonia, the union might have a really good, Miguel was saying, good rapport with more left-wing, anarchist-leaning social movements that they could have stronger bonds with. That's kind of up to the unions on the ground, right? As long as it's coordinated at a national level, they're the ones who are calling the shots and tell the national committee, this is what's going on, and this is what, there are 600 police in our town, and we have to get out there and support that or whatever.
Let me put this to you. This article just came out in The Guardian 6 hours ago, but it's saying Spain is threatening to enter into uncharted political territory as the prime minister prepares to carry out his threat to halt the regional government's push for independence by imposing direct rule from Madrid. Mm. I've heard some people say that, what dog do anarchists have in this fight? Are we going to see, basically two ruling classes kind of try to duke it out? Is there going to be a civil war between two nationalist fronts? And what do you think? What is politically, just to kind of step back and look politically at what the Spanish state will do, what do you think will happen? As far as how will Spain respond, and then how will the leaders of the independence movement respond as well?
Well, that's...
Just to keep it quickly, Miguel, just to quickly keep in mind that this isn't some sort of, I agree with you that it is about two states who could be duking it out, but what's happening in Catalonia is a mass grassroots movement there, and they might be, big movements are being used by the government to attain their ends, partially that is true. The fact remains that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people who go out into the streets and are organizing things locally by themselves, right? So this isn't just right. about two governments fighting each other. This is also about social movements. I mean, there's all sorts of issues there, but this isn't just like a two governments talking or two militaries. It's a big movement.
Yeah, I was talking to a comrade from Catalonia this morning, and he was telling me that what some people are not realizing is this is going to end up being a new transition, a second phase of the transition that took place in the 70s, because this is going to completely redraw the Spanish state, not only in terms of like its shape and its physical territories that that belong to it, but also the relationship of power within the state is going to change a lot. At the moment, all the power is basically on the hands of the political parties, mainstream unions, big economic bodies, things like that. And if we want to take back part of that power and take it to the people, then we have to build up on the issues that take people to the street. And I agree that the Spanish state is going to be changed forever. I think eventually, maybe not now, but maybe in some years' time, but Catalonia is going to gain the independence. Some other territories will try to follow suit as well. Even if it doesn't happen, then the changes are going to be so profound that they're going to completely regrow the state in terms of new balances of power. And I don't know, maybe the crown will go out and there will be a republic. Maybe it will be the traditional parties are going to move much farther to the right and they're going to be more authoritarian. I don't know, but certainly I don't think things are going to be the same. I'm not sure. I don't think there's going to be a civil war because there's no army in Catalonia. So if anything, there would be like this massive massacre of people on the streets, which I'm really hopeful will happen.
Right. But I doubt that would happen, just to specify, because of the EU.
Hopefully not. Yeah, hopefully not.
But I think the EU's already irritated enough with the fiasco of the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. But what we're already seeing in other parts of the state is also this comeback Spanish nationalism, which, as I said before, is strongly linked to the right wing. So it's kind of moving large parts of society towards the right wing, while others are moving farther to the left, because we're seeing a chance now of trying to achieve changes that some people have been calling for ages. Some people are also seeing this as a second chance for the 15th of May movement. You know, when thousands of people took to the street asking for fundamental change to the state, to the way democracy is implemented in Spain and things like that. And actually, some changes happened, but that kind of fused out and, well, it went back to the electoral, it went back to Congress through this party, Podemos, and things like that. But now some people are kind of seeing this again, this energy, lots of people in the street, lots of people asking for fundamental change. So is this going to actually lead to a second transition, to a fundamental redraw of the Spanish state? I think it is going to, in one way or another, and we can only hope that it's going to be for the better, and not for the return of dark ages of authoritarianism and far right.
Well, that kind of brings me to my next question. You know, across Europe and in the U.S., we are seeing the rise of reactionary nationalists, and in the U.S. case, explicitly white nationalists and neo-Nazi groups and parties. Just, you know, one of the amazing things about you all is that you can look back on, you know, over 100 years of anarchist activity in history. Is there do you feel that there is something that you're building, you know, with the CNT and the larger anarchist movement in Spain, that is kind of answering these questions that it seems like a lot of people are looking to answer? And if there is no autonomous grassroots, community-based, rooted in class struggle groups that are, you know, addressing economic and everyday concerns, a lot of people are going towards the right. So are you seeing with your organizing the ability to kind of pull people in an anarchist direction as opposed to just allowing them to kind of like enter into the arms of reactionary nationalists and fascists?
Yeah, what happened in Spain 7 years ago or 6 years ago came as a surprise to many of us, because we had been organizing with unemployed people for the two previous years, say 2007 to 2009, and we were really scared that this turn to the right was going to happen as well in Spain. Everything seemed poised for this to happen. And instead, people came out in the streets, and then the 15th of May movement happened, which is kind of people trying to get things into their hands, and instead of simply going to the right for answers. It came as a surprise. We didn't really expect that to happen. Well, some of us didn't. Maybe some people did. I didn't. I didn't expect that to happen to that extent. That energy that people took out to the streets on those days has prevented. It has changed the political atmosphere farther to the left, as opposed to what's happening in lots of other parts of the globe. I think what's happening now in Catalonia is also a build up on what happened in 2011 and the years following. So that's why some people are seeing this as a second chance of actually going out in the streets, taking things into your own hands. And also we're seeing the need to stop some people from going to the right. Because actually that tendency is also obvious in Spain, but to a much lesser degree than it is in other countries in Europe or in the States. Now the problem or the danger is that as a reaction to Catalan calls for independence, Spanish nationalists are going to go further to the right. I think we need to stop that from happening. Then the only way for that to happen is to, I mean, the only way to stop that from happening is to actually get again in the streets and push for change from a left-wing, from a radical point of view. I'm not sure we can draw. Well, yeah, we can. We can draw some ideas, some lessons from the history of the anarchist movement, like when there was the military coup d'état in 1936. People actually took out to the streets and they made revolution, and that's what actually stopped the military from taking power. So maybe that's what's going to happen now. Who knows?
I think that the question was a great one, because see, I think CNT has a big role to play there in offering itself as, I mean, Miguel mentioned this before, as a tool to use for the working class to achieve, you know, short-term, medium-term, long-term goals, which are, it sometimes coincide with the Catalonian nationalist or this independence movement goal, sometimes not. But yeah, we have to be there available. So there's the available part, and then there's the passive receiving people part, and then there's an active going out, being on the streets, participating in these conversations, to always be offering our model and our tool for people to use as to gain improvements in their workplace and their lives in the longer term society.
Mm-hmm. Well, one last question. We've been talking for over an hour now. I just wanted to ask, you know, we've had somebody else that lives in Spain on the show before, Peter Gelderloos, who's long from the United States but now lives in Spain, more involved with what we would call insurrectionist currents. You know, there's a wider range of anarchist tendencies and formations in Spain. How do you all work together or not? Like, how does that work? You know, whether it's the squatting movement with the anarchist labor unions, the different social movements. I mean, how do you see the pluses and minuses of trying to figure out how to work together?
I think, as Ellison said before, that depends a lot on the town and the place where you actually develop your union activities. CAT as a union is very much focused on workplace struggles, and as such, in the workplace, there are not that many anarchist groups that you would encounter. Other than that, obviously, we also deal with social issues and in neighborhoods, communities, areas, and that. And in some of these areas, there are anarchists who are active as well. Most of the time, I would say the relationship is good, and we're working on similar issues from a similar point of view. But as I said, that would depend a lot on the town. Some towns people will get along fine and they will work together. Some of the places maybe there's rivalries or they don't get along for whatever the reason and they don't. I would say mostly that's the case, that people get along and work together fine.
Yeah, there's overlap too. So there are a lot of people who are involved in like anarchist groups and are also in CNT. There are people who are in CNT who are no anarchist groups. There are people in CNT who don't even identify themselves. They're not identity anarchists, right?
Right.
So, but then you have people who are very much identity anarchists who are in CNT who are also participating in more social based stuff there. Well, yeah, it's right. Like, it depends on where we are.
Well, just one last question to kind of sign us off. In terms of creating an international anarchist discussion, how do you think that we could continue forward in continuing to have these conversations? Because in some ways it just seems like, I mean, there's so many different things going on, but they're, I mean, from the Philippines to, you know, here in the United States to you in Spain, I mean, there's anarchist groups all over the world that are organizing. How do you think we can better have a more of an international discussion?
That's a difficult question as well. I don't know. I'm not sure we can actually have an all-encompassing discussion that would, like, in a way that everyone can take part at all times. As you probably know, we're trying to organize a new international effort on the area of anarcho-syndicalism and a new international organization that will bring together lots of different anarchists, anarcho-syndicalist revolutionary unions. I think that's an important way forward. We need to develop organizations that help us develop new ties and new forms of solidarity between the different organizations. But as for the anarchist movement as a whole, with all the different initiatives and that, that's one thing that's been worrying me for a long time, because as you know, there are also different currents and different tendencies, and we all have different proposals or on different concepts of organization. I'm not sure we can actually have a meaningful discussion that will bring absolutely everyone on board. Maybe there's a group that you've never even heard of and they're trying to push forward anarchist ideas in the community in some country. But I think it's I think we need to start achieving some consensus, and we need to start settling discussions. What I mean by that is reaching agreements that let us move forward on other issues. So we're always going to have different ways of organizing, different ways of working, and different perspectives of how to go about our own work. Like, for example, we focus on the workplace, obviously, and lots of other anarchists won't do that because they consider other areas are more important or not even more important. I mean, for some of us, we're now working, or now we're now more involved with an anarcho-syndicalist union, and we obviously focus on the workplace. That doesn't mean that we feel like that is the only work, that is the only place where we have to work or where we have to carry our own activity, but that's where we are, that's what we're doing now. And some of the comrades, some of the anarchists are working on other different areas, which are also important. I think that all adds up to a meaningful movement that encompasses lots of different areas in a decentralized way. And I think that's also positive, and that's also valuable. That's something we have to value, if I can say that.
I agree with Miguel that it's not really about everybody seeing eye to eye about specific issues or whatever. It's about everybody doing their part where they want to be participating. The more groups there are, the more work will be done. The bigger the groups are, you know, the bigger the impact they'll have. So, yeah, it's not so much about coming to agree on something. And I think that, like, a really positive initiative, CNT, FAU, and USI started a couple years ago to strengthen international, like, anarcho-syndicalist and revolutionary syndicalist unions internationally has been growing, and it's very exciting and pretty powerful, exciting. Red and black unions are getting involved, and we're working towards just in the space that CNT works in, which is the red and black anarcho-syndicalist labor organizing. We are working on that, growing an international presence and making it actually effective. So through, we were with IUW, is coming to the next Congress, and IP in Poland, and we're having a lot of contact with these unions, and they're doing really interesting work along anarcho-syndicalist, revolutionary syndicalist, unionism lines. So I think that's a really exciting thing that actually CNT is involved in internationally.
Awesome. Well, thanks y'all for coming on. Thanks so much for sharing your thoughts. I know it's late over there. Is there anything else you want to add, either on the CNT, how people can follow your work? Any other thoughts that we didn't cover?
We've got a great Twitter account. We've got a Facebook account.
Okay.
Those are great ways to follow us. You can also write to anybody who's interested in contacting international relations. Could write to, it's exteriores, exterior with an E-S at the end, exteriores, at cnt.s.
Yeah, and I'll be getting back to them with a reply. Yeah, no, just thank you for having us. Thank you for letting us try to explain this. I know the situation is difficult, and I know lots of people are having misapprehensions about all these nationalists. And someone would say the other day, like, well, someone was telling me the other day, like, yeah, well, I know what you're saying, but then I look at the pictures and I see all these nationalist flags, and it kind of puts me off supporting this or trying to get involved with this. And I totally understand that. All we can say is we're trying to do our role as a revolutionary union, as a revolutionary organization, and it's difficult for everyone because there's lots and lots of different agendas trying to play the situation to their advantage, and we're just trying to put forward put our message across and trying to reach to people. So, it's normal that we'll have second thoughts about all this. Thank you for giving us a chance to try to explain our point of view.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. I mean, so awesome to hear. I mean, there's so much history that, you know, we in the U.S. feel connected to, in Spain, obviously. So it's great to be in dialogue with people that are there and, you know, talking about these struggles as well. So thanks a lot. We'll have to have you on again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.